with Armand DeMille.
Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. Surprisingly, we thought we might not be with you today. Because there are so many things that we here at WBAI and people try to do to take care of themselves. And today, we're going to talk about taking care of yourself. Yes? There are certain parts of yourself that are invisible to yourself. You know it. You know, you don't know it, and that's how you keep getting bit by habits and things, and you say, oh, why did I do that again? Yes, why did I do that again is one of the things that we have to take care of. We have to eventually grab hold of. Today, I want to talk about self-sabotage. Self-sabotage, it's such a big word, sabotage. I think it's, you know, self-defeating, well, it's okay, that could be kind of fit, but self-defeating doesn't really work. It's when we knock ourselves off the place we would like to go. When we want to go somewhere and do something, and somehow we do something that gets in the way. So I want to talk about that, both in relationships and in business. We sometimes inflict our own losses. Self-inflicted losses are characterized by one or more of the four following behaviors. Number one is misleading. Two is distracting. Three is overreacting. And four is abandoning. We're going to talk about all these. Misleading. When you mislead yourself, you put yourself in the dark and you forgot who turned out the lights. You rationalize, you oversimplify, you distort, or you overlook critical information. Now, overlooking critical information is one of the big things that we do to help us keep ourselves from getting ahead. You know, it's like some people have a program inside them not to success. It's not to succeed. It's almost like some part of them says, you know, I better not earn more money than my father did because that would be a bad thing. Or I better not do anything that would take me beyond the rest of my family. So we kind of find a level and we keep ourselves at that level. There are things that people do that are acts of self-sabotage. So I'm going to use as an example of this, this whole idea of not overlooking things. Let's start with that. This is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. We all know we get so close to what we want that sometimes we do something to screw it up. Opportunities you may have had. I knew a guy, Michael, once. Nothing he wanted more in the world than to work for an insurance company. He wanted to work for an insurance company because he wanted to be one of those people who were going to be fair to the public. He was going to be one of those insurance guys who work in the insurance company who was going to work somewhere both for the company and for the insurance people. He was a social worker. He wanted to do it. It was a good, honorable intention. So he finally gets an interview for that job. And what does he do when he goes to the insurance company? He tells them, I want you to know that I have a basic belief that insurance companies are all unfair and that the clients need to get more consideration. Well, of course they didn't hire him. And he worked for years to get that interview. Michael should have kept quiet that time. Love sabotage. Yes, my friends, love sabotage. You get close. You get closer. Then suddenly you decide that things have to be different. Here you are in the best, most powerful, beautiful, sensual relationship in your life. I'm going to talk about a romantic relationship. It's going perfect. Each day you find each other more and more easy to connect with. Did you ever have that experience? You could have it with a friend too, but with a lover, it's just amazing. Sex becomes magic. You know all the right spots, all the right buttons. You know where to touch, how hard to touch, where to kind of, you know exactly how to bring each other to the height of readiness and the height of pleasure. It's fabulous. It's fabulous. It's a great thing that people do with each other. It's amazing. And then somehow you wind up in the middle of this, as the relationship is growing, you start talking to each other, and you learn each other's likes and dislikes. And you're learning more, and you're learning more, and then you do something to screw it up. So here it's all, kind of perfect, and it's got its natural emergence, and if you had a plant that was growing, you certainly wouldn't take that plant and say, I want to add some more fertilizer to it, because, you could kill it that way. But that's what we do with each other. So you start talking about the future, or you talk about restrictions. What you're doing is you're manifesting your fear because you're feeling so close, you're feeling so vulnerable, and your fears begin to appear. And so you start talking about, well, where are we going to be going with this? What's going to happen next week? Am I going to see you every week this month? And those fears start coming up, and it's all about fear. And it didn't have a chance to really grow by itself. Like I said, it's like a plant that you fertilize when it's in full flower. Just not the right idea. Leave it alone. One way, the biggest way, is the way I started talking about earlier. The biggest way that people sabotage relationships is by ignoring information. Listen. She had another boyfriend when you met her. So now she's seeing you. And then later you discover that she has you plus another boyfriend. And you feel totally betrayed. You feel like, oh my God, how could she have done that to me? Well, you remember, you have that information at the beginning. This is a person who was comfortable with polygamy. While she was seeing you, she was seeing the other person. She's comfortable with that. You ignore that information. You never talk about it. Listen, he never invites you over to his home. He has one excuse or another. This is another scenario. Right? He has one excuse where, oh, my house is too dirty. It's too filthy. I live like a pig. I don't want to invite you over there. I'll go over to your house instead. Meanwhile, your relationship is growing and it's blossoming and it's getting more and more beautiful and the two of you are becoming the greatest lovers on the planet. The earth shakes every time you get together and you spend time together. And then he also happens to only have a cell phone, and he says, I don't have a home phone because I just use my cell phone, like a lot of people do nowadays. So you can't really call him at home. You can only call him on his cell, and he doesn't always answer because he says he has to turn it off because he's in church or something like that. Okay? But you see, you're having such a good time. See, you ignore it. You don't say anything about it. You leave it alone, and you invest your heart deeper and deeper. Now, here is the act of self-sabotage. It is ignoring the information. You could perfectly well say to him, you might be the kind of person who says, listen, do you live with somebody? And he may say to you, yes, I do. And then you may make your decision based on that. But instead, you don't challenge it, you ignore it. Information that we ignore as a form of self-sabotage. You go out to buy a house. I knew someone who did this. And went out to buy a house. He saw a house and he looked at the house. And as he was looking through the house, he saw that the timbers in the basement were eaten by termites. He saw there was a lot of termite damage. The realtor said to him, no more though. They were all cleaned out. The seller said, yeah, we used to have a termite problem, but it's not any longer. The guy buys a house and termites. You know what I mean? Sure, there are a lot of legal repercussions to that and all that stuff. But he was so excited about buying the house. He got it at a really good price. Little wonder why. Ignoring the information, found himself straddled. right? Things don't feel right, and you ignore the information. Now, does that mean you should be paranoid? No. But there's some balance in the middle if you're going to invest your heart somewhere, and you're going to invest it all at once. Keep your eyes open. Listen, he goes out with this woman, and she tends to have tirades, screaming and yelling. She gets mad at people. And you watch her occasionally, and even though she's not yelling at you, she is screaming and screaming at people in stores. Well, you love her. She's such a passionate person. So you just ignore this. You say, boy, she gets mad at other people. And there you are, years later, with her screaming at you, and you're wondering, well, you know, if I had known this in the first place, well, you did know it in the first place. But we choose to ignore the information. Listen, you think yourself. I'm going to ask you to call in. What kind of information did you ignore in a relationship? You saw the relationship, and there it was right in front of you, and you can't imagine how sometimes blind we could be. Very often, people will form a relationship, and then they'll hide out from their friends. You know, you form a relationship with somebody, and then you don't want to talk to anybody about it. You don't want to talk to anybody about it because they may bring in reality. They may say to you, what do you mean he only dates you at work? What do you mean he never goes out with you anywhere else? What do you mean he only sees you in the copy room? You know, maybe there's something else to it. But they might bring in some reality. Like, you know, he's 45 years old and he lives with his mother. You want to ignore that information because you're having a good time. Your friends may tend to have opinions about it. And they may be a little short and brief, and they kind of bring that to you, and you go, oh, I don't want to pay attention to it. I know a man who was an older man, older by compared to the woman he was going out with. She was 19. He was 35, 36 years old. And when he started dating her, I remember he told all his friends, I am not going to meet with any of my friends now. I have met this young woman. I am in love with her, and I don't want the influence of anyone else. He said, I just don't want to have anybody coming in with their opinions about her youth because I know exactly what's going to happen. And you know, when I hear a funny thing, the relationship worked out fine. In fact, it worked out great. After a year, they wound up getting married, and then after that, they reinvited all their friends back, and everything worked out fine. He was right to do exactly what he did. You know, funny thing. In most cases, that doesn't work out. Listen, his socks don't match. He wears two different kinds of socks. You ask him about it, and he says, oh, yeah. Later in life, you're fighting with him because he doesn't notice things, because things aren't important to him. Well, things aren't important to him. You knew it because he wore mismatched socks. Unless it's a style. By the way, that is becoming a new style. I was just reading recently where people are buying socks one at a time and matching them up. Listen, she has no girlfriends. You meet somebody new. She has no girlfriends. She doesn't like women. She doesn't like women. You can see every time she talks about a woman, she talks about them in bad tones. You kind of like it because it isolates her and it lets her bring her more to you, right? You think, oh, she's more mine than anything else. But see what happens when you try to have friends. See what happens. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We're talking about some of the things that people tend to ignore that would help you in your relationship. Look, you met this young man, and he's really wonderful, and he says he's 18 years old, but he's still got his name stitched in his underwear. You know, there's a certain amount of information that you just can't ignore. So the person, see, if a person could be hiding something, they could have something you don't like. If you meet someone and they say to you, all right, I was in the prisons. I've been arrested, yes, for petty theft or for theft, for grand larceny. I served 2 years in jail. That's why I have this tattoo on my arm that looks like a prison tat, you know? So if he tells you that, then you guide yourself accordingly and you say to yourself, well, maybe I should be a little cautious. because this person does have a history of doing something illegal, but I will proceed in my relationship with my eyes open. But to ignore it and to say, oh, well, that doesn't mean anything, that's in the past. See, that's the kind of thing we're talking about. You would love to succeed in love, as everybody would. There are signs, addictive behaviors. Every day you see him, he smokes a joint. Or she smokes a joint. Every day. There's always marijuana around. It's a sign. It's a sign that reality is not as good as being high. So you have a wonderful time, you two float off, you have a great time, you have a wonderful time with each other, but then comes the time when you want to land on Earth and bring it into reality, and you just can't. So I'm going to ask you to call in. What are the signs that you've ignored in your life? I'm also going to show you something else, that one of the ways that some people sabotage their relationships is they get too picky about the signs. I'll show you that, how that works too. You meet somebody. She's depressed. She's so depressed, she gets moody. She gets so moody at times that if you have a date, she says, I'm just going to stay home. I'm not going out. Doesn't have a therapist. Is on medication. Deeply depressed. You get together with her. You have a wonderful time. The two of you share a really nice time together. But years later, you're still dealing with her depression. And now you're on the other side of it. Now there's nothing you could do to shake her, and you wonder, well, I didn't think it was going to turn out this way. Well, my friends, there were the signs early on. There are other signs that people have, like an unusual attachment to a family member. A person chooses the loyalty of their parent, you know, their mother, my mother and I, my mother and I, my mother and I, my mother's my best friend, my daughter's my best friend. These are funny signs. These are things you might pay attention to. Anyway, this is Armand DeMille. You go out with somebody who's divorced 5 times, and you say, ah, but this is the right time, this is the real time. Things like that don't often work. Our telephone number here today, and I'm going to be happy to hear from some of you because it's been a long time. 212 doesn't mean I won't be happy to hear from all of you. We're going to bring you more information about self-sabotage. 212-209-2900. That's our number here, 212-209-2900, here at WBAI. We are going to take some of your calls. You know, it's not everybody doesn't always go in the direct path. We're going to talk about the other ways that people sabotage themselves. Right now, we're starting with the signs that we ignore at the beginning. And it doesn't have to be in romance. It could be in the house you bought, the job you chose. You choose a job, you go to work for somebody who's a real hero, you listen to somebody on the radio, and he's a wonderful human being, right? And you go to work for him, and he winds up being nitpicky and, you know, mean and bad-spirited, and you say, but he's not like the guy on the radio. Well, you know, it's all right. At the beginning, you see it, and you have a choice. But then you feel heartbroken, because you had so much invested in it. These things happen. I hear about them every day. 212-209-2900. Let's hear from one of you. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello. Can you turn down your radio, please?
Yes. How are you, Armand?
Good. Who is this?
Tony.
Hello, Tony.
You know, it's funny. One of the big signs, I remember when I first started dating my ex-wife. We were together for about 6 months. Everything was wonderful. And one day I came home and I was rushing to the gym. And I grabbed a couple of T-shirts, threw them in my bag, and I said, I'm leaving. Okay, I got to go. I'm going to the gym. And she literally cursed me out, overreacted, and threw me out, thinking that I was, like, sneaking, like, my clothes out of the house to not see her anymore. And I forgave her about 3 weeks later of begging and crying. But you know what? That was the big sign. I remember it so clearly now. We had an incredibly tempestuous and aggressive relationship, volatile relationship for 8 years. And
what was the best part of that volatile relationship? What was the good news? Was the sex fantastic?
No. The only, again, subconsciously, what I remember, what I know, was that I stayed in there for my daughter. I loved my daughter. I did the best I could with for my daughter. We had a kid, like, almost immediately. And I tried for that reason. But
no, but there's something about the tempestuous relationship that is appealing. You see, usually it's the sex is really fantastic and dynamic.
Yeah,
if it isn't that, if it isn't that, it's going to be something else. Do you have a tendency to get depressed?
No, no. I do have a tendency to be like a helper, though, like a savior, try to save.
Okay, so there it is. I mean, with somebody who's a tempest,
yeah,
there's always an emergency. So you always have a reason to help. You see, then there's something you're always... So you must have been trying to save her over and over again.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure I did. Thank God I learned from it, you know? Yeah, it's really, really so clear. That's fine. And, you know, I actually forgave her like 3 weeks later. But that was like the first huge sign that I just totally blocked out, you know?
And it was a huge sign that she can get overly concerned about something that's not true and
have
a hysterical reaction and blow out at you, right? And
absolutely.
Then at the end of your relationship, did you find that's exactly the reason you had to leave her?
Oh, absolutely. That was the reason. The reason. It was the reason our marriage didn't work.
Yeah, I hear.
You know?
Well, good. Did you get related to anybody else after that, or you?
Well, actually, 4 years later, I am involved with somebody now. I was separated for 4 years, and I met this amazing woman, and we have a really amazing relationship. You know, it's just incredible. You know, but honestly, through all my trials and tribulations, I've learned, you know, a lot, and I've gotten a lot smarter.
Thanks, Tony, and thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Nice to talk to you.
You too.
Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about signs that we see at the beginning that we tend to ignore. There used to be one wise psychologist used to call these food stamps. He said, you know, you see a bad sign about somebody or you see something about somebody you don't like and you save it. Because when you get closer and you feel a little too intimate and you get to a level that goes beyond your intimacy quotient, in other words, there's only a certain amount of getting close to people you allow, then you cash in. You take out these food stamps, and I guess he called them coupons. You take out these little coupons, and you start cashing them in. You say to your partner, you know, you drink too much. Well, they've drank too much from the day you met them. So now you decide, well, it's time to use it. You know, you don't earn enough money. Boom. And you start cashing in on these coupons because you got too close. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. You're on the air. Hello there. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Nice to talk with you. I hear you all the time. I just think you're great.
Thank you. What's your name?
Jennifer.
Hello, Jennifer.
Hi. I actually am with a man that he seems very loyal to me, and he's very loving, but he's very into women. So it's like, and it's actually part of the entertainment world. His videos, like I started getting into him, but then he showed me a video, which is like X-rated, like a music video that he did, but it's just his persona. But you go home, he's a family man. He stays loyal with his friends he's been with for years, and you know, it's from what it sounds like, the girls that he's been with in the past, he's been loyal with and cheated on one time, but it's just hard for me to trust him all the time. Like, I find myself going away, like, on my brain taking me away, like, you know, is he cheating on me or, you know, because he is flirtatious, but he's also, it's part of his show too, you know?
Well, Jennifer, let me ask you, going back in time, when you met him, was he with somebody else?
No, he wasn't. Well, he had a breakup from a couple of months ago, maybe.
All right, so that's a good sign, because that was one sign that I would ask myself. You know, I mean, now, you know, I was looking at a video of MC Hammer the other day. One of the most flirtatious guys and who did videos that were almost pornographic, if you looked at him closely, but he's one of the most faithful guys that ever went around. I mean, it's a possibility in that world. So I know it's not. Now, let me ask you about your history.
Yes.
Do you have a sister?
Yes.
Older sister?
Younger.
Younger sister. Yes. Is your younger sister your favorite to your father, or are you your father's favorite?
You know what? My mother kind of blocked that off. Like, it was a weird thing in our family where...
Your mother,
you know,
blocked
my,
off your yes, father. I see.
Yeah. She didn't like him buying us anything, or, like, if we were cuddling with my dad, sometimes, like, all right, come on, leave. You know, mom's coming. It's weird.
That's right. You have to jump out because mom's coming.
Yeah.
It's almost like your mom was competing with you and your sister for your dad's thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of romance. Well, now this is an interesting thing, Jennifer. Look at this terrible conflict. Here you have... What are you laughing at?
Oh, no. It's the terrible conflict.
You're seeing the link, right? Here you are as a kid, unable to enjoy the love of your father because another woman gets in the way. And here you are, trying to love the man you're with, but afraid that another woman is going to get in the way. Of course you're going to be afraid. You have a mom who kind of made you punchy.
Yeah.
You never knew what it was like to be allowed to love anybody. So this is the kind of thing, Jennifer, which is going to affect you. Now, this does not mean that your guy is totally trustworthy, but you are sensitive to not being loved. You've never been loved properly. Nobody, you haven't even been parented properly. In fact, your mom didn't really like you, and your dad couldn't really get close to you. You were an orphan.
Yes, which is why I've been in therapy.
Sure.
Yeah, that's wow. Because I was thinking, like, I don't have many jealous people around me, but I find myself getting so jealous, and when he leaves or he's going to be going on tour, my heart just... I feel like I'm going to fall apart sometimes.
Okay, so Jennifer, this means that the work you're doing in therapy is not working. You understand? Because the therapy should have fixed this by now if you've been in there for over 6 months.
I just started with an amazing new therapist.
Great.
That really helped clear it. I mean, this one feels right. Like, I've dropped the other two, and then this one feels like we've got, like, a game plan, and she's just giving me thoughts that are really freeing, and, yeah.
Well, that's really fabulous. Have her work, but, you know, you've got to do this with your therapist. It's like if you have a car, and your car has a broken part, like a part that doesn't work, like the window that doesn't go down or something, you don't go to the car guy who wants to fix your transmission. What you've got to do is say, I have this thing that's getting in my way, and I want to focus on the triangulation of my mother and father of me. And how that relates to my relationship with my boyfriend. And I want to do this every week until I get over it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was looking for a way to get... This jealousy is driving me nuts. It's just... It disables me. It takes up too much energy and my... Too much thoughts.
So your therapist, who sounds fabulous because they are probably so creative, right? It's probably a very creative person, can attack this with you. But it is the job of the... What they call analysand... Or that means the person who's in analysis, but you're not in analysis. The person who's in therapy, it's your job to tell the therapist what you want to fix. And
okay.
You have something really important, Jennifer, because you're right on target. You see, you're right on target. You know exactly what it is. I am making a mistake here. I am treating my boyfriend the same way I dealt with my father. I am afraid that somebody's going to come in and take him away.
Yes.
So I want to get over this, and I want to focus on this this week, next week, the following week. It should take you 5 weeks.
Okay.
You know? It's great to talk to you. And that's another thing that we know about these things. And that was just, of course, we were getting a little beyond signs that she's ignoring. I was talking about some people who are oversensitive to signs. Another way that people sabotage is they take some sign and they become oversensitive to it. And that's, you know, another way of sabotaging a potential love, even though I am not vouching for her guy. Because for all I know, you know, how do I know? Anyway, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind on WBAI here, 99.5 FM. We are going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'll present you a little bit of music, and we'll be right back with you. Make your calls if you want, 209-2900 right here in New York.
All right, here we go. Bring it up.
Interesting music, isn't it? By the Pleb. It's called No Mercy. We'll give you a little more of that a little later. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI, if you just tuned in. We're here bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests. We've been talking about some of the ways that people sabotage themselves in different ways. We're talking about things that people ignore, and I know I've got a lot of calls on the line about one of the ways that people do it. One of the ways you sabotage yourself both in business and in relationships is by ignoring some of the signs. Now, I consider business the home you buy, the apartment you rent. I remember a person who rented an apartment, young people, and they were 18 years old or 19 years old or 20 years old, a couple getting together, and they rented this apartment. And when they rented this apartment, it had a beautiful kind of area outside that was going to become their terrace. The guy called it, the landlord called it a terrace, but there was a door between them. You know, not a door, there was a wall between them and the terrace. And so he said to the landlord, can we build a door? And the landlord said, you could do anything you want. Anything you want to make yourself happy here. So they signed a lease, and before they signed the lease, they turned the lease over to, remember, he turned it over to his mother, or she turned it over to her mother, and the mother looked at it and said, wait a minute, it says he can't make any alterations. And the daughter said, yeah, but he said it was okay. He said he would, he just has to give the lease this way. And it says you can't paint your house any color but white. And she says, yeah, but he said I could paint it any color I wanted. Well, of course, 2 years come by. They sign the thing. They try to put in the door. He says you can't put in the door. They try to paint their apartment, and the value of apartments goes up, and he wants to get rid of them. Now he wants to get rid of the tenants, but they have a lease. And the way he deals with that is he said you painted your walls a different color. They have to be all white, according to this. And all the things he said were okay were no longer okay. But they were young. They were 22. He was a charming guy. I think they got older as I was speaking just now. Did I say they were 18, 19, now they're 22? They're getting older as we talk. And they wanted to trust. How do they know that if you're signing an apartment lease, it's not a bad idea to have it looked over by a lawyer? You know, that it may cost you $100 to have a lawyer look at it, or $200 at the very most, and that you at least get a good idea of what's going on. How do they know? Well, by ignoring things, you may do it out of innocence, and sometimes you claim it's innocence, but innocence in itself can be your own way of sabotaging yourself, because let's look at what innocence is. Innocence is what a child feels. And many people never want to become an adult. They want to be children forever. Who blames them? If I could be a child forever, I'd love it. You know, but it doesn't work that way. So if you want to be a child forever, one of the ways to do it is to have your innocence be the reason that you never get anything you want. In no sense. Interesting if you break it into three words. In no sense. Innocence. Innocence is not always what it shapes up to be. You know, when you look at somebody, oh, it's because they're innocent that they got screwed. That's the way you stay little. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call, and then we'll go back to more of this of how people defeat themselves. 212-209-2900. When you get on the line, would you please tell me your name and turn down your radio all the way? Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing, Armand?
Good. Oh, this is a familiar voice. Is this Ensarara?
Is it who?
I thought you were somebody who I knew.
Nah, I am somebody you know, but I'm not Ensarara.
Okay.
Anyway, Armand, how you doing?
Good.
The trickiest question of all...
Your name.
Oh, yeah, it's Bob.
Okay, Bob.
Is self-sabotage when it comes to choosing a therapist or staying with a therapist? You can devote a whole show to this or if you want, but it's involving choosing a therapist or staying with a therapist beyond the point where my intuition is telling me it's wrong.
It's so hard, Bob. That's one of the hardest things in the world, and I know what you're saying.
Can you speak about it a bit?
Is intuition the thing that tells you it's wrong, or is the potential change scaring some part of you on the inside, and that's what makes you want to leave? I mean, I think one of the best ways to test therapy is if you feel like you got to leave, you make a deal with yourself, you leave for a little while, but you go back. You see, if you got to get away, because sometimes what happens in therapy is you are in therapy, and as soon as you start developing some power, I'll give you an example. Person is depressed. They're unable to talk back to anybody. They go through therapy, and in their therapy, they discover an anger that's sitting inside them towards their parents. And they never wanted to face this anger. They've ignored it their whole lives. In therapy, the person feels the anger. That week, they go home, and their entire system is shaken because they swore their parents loved them and everything was fine. And so then the inside takes over and it says, wait a minute, we don't want it to be this way. So part of what is known as resistance in therapy is a person who is going to make changes, who suddenly feels by instinct, or what you're saying, intuition, that they must leave. On the other hand, Bob, sometimes your intuition is right. Sometimes the therapist is just wrong, and you got to get out of there.
It's a tough bind because the therapist will be the first one to tell you that, you know, it's my projection, that
sure,
I'm running away from my feelings.
That's right.
All the standard cliches that, you know.
And they may be right, which is a problem.
Excuse me?
And then they may be right, which is a problem.
Right, they may be right, but they might not be, the problem is, it's kind of a catch-22. They
sure
may be right, but they might not have the necessary skills to be able to deal with the projections or even know how to deal with the transference that's going on.
That's a good point. And that's where you know a lot about therapy. You could be a therapist.
I could, but I need to work on myself first.
Okay, okay, but you've got exactly the point. You know exactly the point. Well, and if the therapist cannot deal with that transferential issue, and I don't want to get too technical about it because half the audience can't follow us, you know, but I think you're right. So if they have to deal with it, and by your level of sophistication, they can't deal with it, then maybe it is time to move on and find somebody who can.
I find that it might be time for me to move on. I don't know, because I'm desperate to get help. And sometimes, you know, you get what you can get, and it's very hard to move on with therapists.
Yeah.
However,
yeah.
You know, when I find myself lecturing to the therapist that transference is happening here and trying to make them aware of it, then I know that something's not right. It sounds arrogant, but it's just my perceptions and trying to educate the therapist. It makes me feel very strange.
Well, yes, it does make you feel strange on one level. On another level, Bob, it's great because whenever a person is in that position where they have to educate their therapist, the therapist becomes, in effect, like a parent. And part of what we could never do as a kid was convince our parents about what we really needed. So, in effect, if you get a chance to be able to really get yourself across to that therapist who's a substitute parent at the moment, it really is quite an achievement. That works in one way. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And I understand your dilemma, too. I understand it may just not be right. And I know when you're talking about you get what you get, sometimes you don't have somebody who's got the skill and the talent to take you where you have to go. At your level of sophistication, you'd be very difficult.
I tend to see things very, very simply. There are two types of therapists. They used to say there were three, you know, those that do nothing, those that do harm, and those that do good. I've broken it down into the ones who do nothing are actually doing a destructive act.
Sure.
There's actually two types of therapists.
And what's the other kind?
Is the good type of therapist who actually, you know, actually helps, whatever that means.
Sure, I hear what you mean.
But to do nothing is basically to keep the person spinning inside his own, you know, hamster wheel and not being perceptive of the person's... if the therapist is unaware of what's happening, then it's destructive because it leaves the patient, you know, it's basically like having nobody else there.
I hear you, Bob. Thanks for
calling in. Thanks a lot.
Yes.
Speak to you soon.
Yeah, and you don't only run into that with therapists. You know, you got the same thing with physicians.
Oh, don't even go there, Alman. Don't even go there.
I mean, the physician who can't see you. You know, the lawyer who can't see
you. No, but the physicians are trained not to see you. That's part of the medical training.
Oops. All right.
Okay. I'll see you later.
I better go, right?
Bye-bye.
212-209. That's right. We better not go there. 212-209-2900. One of the other ways that people defeat themselves when they're on the road to success, like let's say you're going to school and you're trying to get your degree and you get up towards the end of your degree. I know a lot of people who are called ABD. You know what ABD is? ABD is such a funny thing. We're not going to take that call yet, Michael. I will in just a minute. ABD is when a person has everything but their dissertation. Now, dissertation means that when you get to a certain point in school and you're about to get your PhD, you have to present your paper, your primary paper, and you've got to bring it up in front of a board, and you've got to kind of defend it, and that's it. After they flog you enough, you get your PhD, and you get what you went for. But there's a number of people who go through all the schooling, and the thing they don't do is write that final paper. So they become ABDs. And they walk through life being almost, and when I say almost, I mean they're minutes away from getting what they dreamed of. And they don't understand that something stops them. Actually, something inhibits their writing. So ABD is a group out there among the psychologists. I have another group I like that. They call them ABMs. ABMs, to me, are the people who are walking around outside in the world who are acting out their hostility everywhere they go. I call them ABMs because it means all but medication. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. If, you know, it'd be nice if you could get him to not hurt anybody else. So distracting is one of the ways that you do it. If you're out there, we were saying there were four ways: misleading, distracting, overreacting, and abandoning. Distracting is one of the things you could do. You could be in the middle of doing what you want to do, and you're about to succeed at it, and then suddenly you say, I got to go get a pastrami sandwich. I got to go out and do this. I got to call my mother. and you find yourself interrupting what you should have done. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi. My name is Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
And, you know, you were talking before about how you sabotage yourself in a relationship, and it really hit me, and I feel like every time I get close, I do that in a relationship, and I'm afraid that I'm just going to keep doing that every time I get in a relationship.
Well, how do you do it? What do you do?
Well, I think I get close and I run away in a way. You know, like you said, I find fault or I, you know, question certain things and I push it away on a certain level.
Well,
I think
give me an example of what you did in your last relationship.
Well, I was engaged to be married and the guy was supposed to be getting a divorce. And at a certain point, I just kept pushing it. You know, what are you doing with the divorce? Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing this? And why didn't you fill the papers? I mean, I think he had issues about it himself, but I think that I also pushed it to a certain degree because I get afraid and I panic.
Yeah, it does happen. Fear does manifest. Now let me ask you something. Lisa, you know yourself having done this over a period of time, so it sounds to me that you've never really been close to anybody.
No, I never have.
Nobody. What about your family?
I don't feel close to anyone, really. I mean, I think I felt closest to my brother, and he passed away.
Oh, that's terrible. What about as a kid with your parents?
I don't think that I ever felt connected to anybody.
Yeah. So,
and I, like you said about the somebody before, you know, I don't think that I got parented, and I don't think I know how to love or give love.
Yeah.
I really don't.
It makes so much sense. It makes so much sense that we're kind of, you know...
I know, but it's overwhelming, because how do you begin, you know? Like, I feel like... You know, I've been out of this relationship for a long time, and I want to start a new relationship, you know, and I want to move on to the next step. And so I say I'm going to go on the computer and start dating, and I can't even download the computer, you know what I mean? I get stuck on the simplest things.
Sure, sure. What about your closest woman friend?
I you know what? I'd have
I
to
know.
Say I really don't have any.
I know exactly why I'm asking that.
I know.
Okay, so here's the story. Form... Nurture and forget about having a lover.
Mm.
Find a woman friend.
Mm-hmm.
Find a woman friend, and in that friendship, try not to get for an imbalance. Don't find somebody who's submissive. Don't find somebody who's dominant. Find
mm-hmm.
somebody who's an equal. Find it. Don't talk to them about all your grief all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Find it and try to maintain a close relationship with a
mm-hmm.
friend. If you can't do that, join a woman's group.
You know, I've done that before. Now I'm in my 40s. I did that when I was in my 20s. You know, I have been in some relationships. But, each one gets a little better. I get a little closer. But, you know, I think I just, you know, I feel helpless at this point. I feel hopeless.
I know. I'm giving you a hint, though, Lisa.
I know. I know. You said that before.
If we don't do groups, nurture a female friend. I've got to tell this to all the people in the world out there. If the reason I asked you about a woman friend is because I heard from the way you are that you don't have that. So if you want to figure out how to have a better relationship with a man, have a good friend who's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then try to maintain a relationship without sabotaging it with a woman. And I don't necessarily mean a sexual relationship.
I understand.
Now, and I say this to men, too. I say it to men who have a number of dysfunctional relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Go out there and find yourself a male friend.
Mm-hmm.
And have a good relationship with a male friend, and you will find out that you will wind up in more efficient, better love relationships.
I also, you know, for the first time, I feel like I really have felt that I, you know what, I don't want to be alone all my life. I mean, I was a person that was alone all my life, and, you know, I thought I could do that, and I realized I really just don't want to do that anymore. I really do want to have somebody in my life.
Don't you have a cat?
I had a dog, but you know what, I have a daughter now, and I'm a single parent, and that's really all I can handle. I mean, I guess I could get a cat. I'm not a cat lover. I'm a dog lover.
No, but you have a daughter.
I have a daughter.
So you're not alone, are you?
No, I'm not alone.
Is your daughter alone?
I don't know if she feels that yet. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
How old is she?
She's 7.5. I mean, she has her own issues because she's adopted from China, and, you know, I think that she has her own issues about feeling loved and things like that.
Well, you must pour your heart out to her. I can imagine... that if there's one place in the world that Lisa shines, it is in the caring, love, affection, and attention that you
give. And you know what the hardest thing is? You know, a couple of weeks ago, my mother said to me that she felt that I should never have adopted her because I really don't, you know, I'm not being an effective parent. And I think that hurt me the most out of everything. You know, that I have tried so hard to just hold it all together. And I thought that I would at least have her support in that respect.
Did you ever tell your mother that the way you felt
no,
about what she said?
But you know what? I know she's listening.
Oh, good. What's her name?
Florence.
Florence is one of my, a fan of WBAI and the
She podcast. Is. She's never called in, but she supports your
Oh,
you.
Florence.
She turned me on to you.
Florence did a good thing, right? Florence,
yes.
Let me tell you something. Your daughter,
I know she needs well.
Okay, but let's just say it straight, Lisa. I want you to say it straight to Florence right now because your mom is listening. It's not an opportunity many people have, but say it to her straight. Say, Mom, I want you to know that when. Go ahead.
I want you to know that when you said that to me about Jay, that you really hurt me and that I really need your support. And I wish you could give that to me.
And you don't need any criticism from your mom, right?
No, I don't. I really don't.
But you do need her support.
I do.
Yeah. Well, I hope your mom hears that. Maybe your mom will call in over the next 3 minutes, and then she'll be able to talk back to you. In fact, this could become a family show.
Okay.
Lisa, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There are many things we do to hurt ourselves. A lot of them come from the past. A lot of them are in the present. You know, we talk about distracting ourselves. We talk about overreacting. Now, overreacting is a very important thing. When you overreact, you become overpowered from within. One or more feelings, thoughts, or activities, they just seem so important, and your self-restraint and your confidence washes away. You can blow your top. You could act without thinking, or you could become paralyzed by your fears. You know, it's like when you overreact, sometimes you destroy the very thing you want. And sometimes there's a motor inside you. Let's say you're at work and you're about to get a promotion, and then suddenly you get angry, you know, or suddenly you decide to take a walk, or sometimes you just become over-emotional and you lose your promotion. The overreaction is one of those questionable things. It's one of those things that you watch for. You look for distractions, you watch for overreactions, and you look for misleading. The last thing you look for is abandoning yourself. And this is about priorities and escape. You know, it's like where your primary thing is opposed to self-destructive, which moves towards what feels good. Abandoning is primarily a movement away from what feels bad. It's like you space out. You hedge your bets. You put distance between you and anything that threatens you. You convince yourself that you have more important things to do, but you take distance. And that distance is another form of self-sabotage, especially at a time when you got to push on with what you're doing. 212-209-2900. Time for a couple of more calls. This is Armand DeMille with you. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Bonnie, and I wanted to say I love listening to your program. And I'm actually calling because I was raised by a parent who was the adult child of an alcoholic. And are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I'm on a cell phone, so I'm not certain that you're hearing me. And at any rate, I went through a lot of pain in that upbringing. And
well, what about that upbringing, and specifically about her being an adult child of an alcoholic, which means that on some level you're angry at her for the way she treated you, and on another level you're trying to forgive her.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that actually it was my father was verbally abusive, so I thought it was him that was the person to be angry about. And years into therapy, I realized that my mother didn't accept me. And I was a very creative child, and I never quite fit in the family. And she's often said to me, I didn't know how to meet your needs. and has often brought up that as an infant that I wasn't able, I wouldn't let her hold me. But I'm now a movement therapist, and one of the reasons why I didn't let her hold me is I love to move. And that's something that I'm quite clear on now. But I have trouble getting past that because it's affected all of my relationships with women.
Well, where is your mom nowadays?
She lives in New York.
So go hug her.
I have done that, but she pushes me away.
Okay, so then tell her, don't push me away. I'm going to hug you because I want to get over this. So let's work at it together.
Yeah.
I mean, engage her.
I
tell you what you do. Give her $5. Say, Mom, I'm going to give you $5 if you don't push me away when I hug you because I need this. It's going to save me a fortune in therapy. Make it 10 if she needs 10, or buy her a gift if she needs a gift. Whatever it is, Mom, I want to use your body. I'm willing to pay for it.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite difficult because I have a sister who she's quite fond of, and, you know, I can forgive my mother. I understand that she's been abused most of her life by her father and now by her husband. So I understand the position that she's in, and I find myself very compassionate and always giving an ear. But, you know, as I go and I meet other family members, they're all very negative about me. And, of course, they really don't have – their negativity, I know, comes from my mother because it's not based on personal experience.
Yeah,
it's a difficult process.
I hear. And even though you think I'm being simplistic when I say what I'm
no,
saying –
No, you're not.
You know there's potential in this suggestion.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
Dear Mom, I want to use your body. I'm willing to pay for it. Listen, I got to get going, Bonnie. I did not miss the compliment about how you love our program because I'm glad you do and I'm glad you're there. Thanks for calling in. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We do have to be going. If you want a copy of today's program, you would call 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. Do check in on the website, my friends, thepositivemind.com. Sign up for the newsletter. You'll get all the announcements. Thanks for being with us today.
Don't miss out on the second annual Gospel Care Competition and a Gospel Music Benefit for Children. Come hear the Grammy-nominated Godfather of Gospel, Reverend Timothy Wright, and the New York Fellowship Mass Choir, along with last year's winners and the best of New York City's gospel singers competing. The competition takes place Saturday, February 26th at 6 p.m. at the Tribeca Performing Arts Center, 199 Chamber Street in downtown Manhattan. For tickets and more information about the second annual Gospel Care Competition, visit www.gospelcare.org or call 212-870-1114. That's 212-870-1114. Join us for a gospel music benefit for children.
The struggle for Haitian democracy and sovereignty is the subject of a new film by journalist Kevin Kina entitled Haiti, the Betrayal of Democracy. An advanced screening of excerpts from this explosive documentary will be shown on Sunday, February 27th at 5 p.m. at Clara Barton High School, 901 Clapham Avenue in Brooklyn. Speakers include Ben Dupree, Mario Dupree, performer Marguerite Laurent, and lawyer Tom Griffin. Special performances by Eddie Francois and the Voice and Drums Choir of Haiti. February 27th, 5 p.m. at Clara Barton High School, 901 Clapham Avenue in Brooklyn. Take the 2 or 3 train to the Brooklyn Museum. For information or tickets, call Haiti Progress at 718-434-8100. 718-434-8100.
And you are tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. You are available and accessible.